which is John King with JK Welding. We're here at FabTech 2025 in Chicago. And thank you for coming over to the Bryozoz booth today.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
You bet. You bet. And we were just talking a moment ago. And can you tell me about JK Welding? What JK Welding is, what you guys do?
We do just about anything under the sun.
Okay.
Fabrication-wise, you know, from carbon, stainless, aluminum, there's not much we don't do. I mean, hell, we'll even mow your grass if you want us to, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. Laser cutting, plasma cutting, forming, shaping, bending, press brake work, pipe work. We do coating, galvanizing. We do just about anything. We're a full turnkey, one-stop shop.
Okay.
That's always been like our motto, one-stop shop. And that is no lie. The only thing we outsource is weld inspections because we like to be non-biased. We don't want to inspect our own welds. That's like grading your own paper, you know?
Sure.
So that's the only thing that we really outsource. We'll outsource some powder coating and some inspection. Other than that, we're a full in-house turnkey facility, and we love it like that. And we've become that way more and more and more over the years. We didn't start off that way. I mean, I started my company in the garage, you know?
Okay.
My two-car garage. So very limited resources, very limited tooling, and it was just me, you know?
So let's back up. So how did you, what got you started? You grew up around, was like your old man into this stuff? Or
I didn't have any mentor. I didn't learn from any family or friend. You know, I was just, I did work for my dad for the first few years of my career. But besides working for him when he didn't have jobs, he shared a shop with a welding shop, you know.
Okay.
And I would just work in the welding shop and start learning how to weld. And it was a natural knack for me.
Okay.
I felt so comfortable doing it. And then I found out, so did everyone else, that I had a natural knack for supervision. You know,
right.
At 23 years old, I got a crew of 15, 20 guys. And, you know, I'm delegating orders and giving commands and running a job at 23.
Well, you have a presence about you.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And so
absolutely.
I can imagine how the team might have been like, yeah, I'll just do what John's got planned.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So what would you say when you were getting started, what sort of welding were you doing? What type of projects?
So inner shield, MIG welding, flux core welding, fabricating thick plate on big tanks.
Okay.
Tanks that are 8 and 10 foot deep, 10 and 12 foot wide, 30, 40, 50 foot long.
Yeah.
Just welding solid 2-inch thick bevels, 1.5-inch bevels, all
like
day
the
long.
Man stuff.
You know? Oh yeah,
like,
man stuff.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's what I like to
wearing. Do. Wearing heat shields all over your arms to prevent burns. Just welding all day, you know.
Okay, yeah. So and that's kind of where you. So, at what point did you say it's time for John King to go this way?
So I had various different occupations as far as different styles of jobs throughout my early career. After working in the weld shop for 4 years. You know, I went on to work for a school district. They sent me to school to become a licensed air conditioning mechanic.
Okay.
So I have a type A license for commercial air conditioning as well and refrigeration. I did that for 1.5 years. I went on from there to run a welding rig and working for a boiler company, rolling tubes in a tube sheet for boilers and back welding tubes in tube sheets. I did that for 1.5, 2 years. And then after that, I laid brick for a little while because early in my career with my dad, I had laid some brick, so I kind of learned to do that. So it's just a mixture of a bunch of different stuff, but welding was my main focus. And then in 1996, I went to work for a forging company.
Okay.
Not as a welder, as a die mopper.
Okay.
They bring hot molten steel into a press. I actually had a mop and a bucket with oil in it, and I would oil the dies.
Got it. Okay.
And I did not want to do that.
Well,
it's just
pounding the hell out of the metal.
It was pounding the hell out of the metal. It's forging it, extruding it into different shapes.
Okay.
I did not want to do that. But I knew that in order to get my foot in the door and get to a welding position, you have to start at the bottom.
Okay.
So I kept my foot in the door, and I was a die mopper for about 6 months.
Okay.
And then they heard I was a welder. Somebody told somebody I was a welder, and they came to me. They needed welders. I took a test, got a welding position. I ended up staying at that job for 9 years.
So you liked what you were doing?
I did like it. It felt like hero of the day, but I will tell you, it was the most dangerous, extreme dangerous, hazardous job I've ever done in my life.
All right, tell me about that. Like,
It's a forging plant.
Yeah.
It's very slippery. It's dark. It's dungy. Extreme heat conditions. Heat conditions like you've never seen before.
Yeah. Just because they had to make all that metal malleable. So they're heating everything. Heating everything up.
And they're lubricating everything so the metal doesn't stick to the molds. With graphite, real fine graphite. So when you walk in this big forge shop, you look up and you see all this fine graphite floating through the air. Well, yeah. In the day, when you get off work, you blow your nose.
Graphite's
coming
out.
You see, man, you're breathing that stuff, you know?
So like the really fine powder stuff?
Really fine, floating through the air.
So I don't know if you said you've got a few kits. Did you ever do the derby? Like what are the little cars that you make, like Boy Scout type stuff? We had to put the graphite lube on those axles.
So that's the same thing.
Okay, same stuff.
It's basically the same stuff, yeah.
Yeah, there's no way you couldn't breathe that in.
No, you can't, man.
It's everywhere.
Yeah, you just get accustomed to breathing it every day, and it's just after 9 years, let alone the guys that have been there 30 and 40 years. Because I was the first welder they hired in 32 years.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so I grew up around old school dudes, old school welders.
Yeah, like no masks.
Oh, no. No masks. No.
Just kind of close your eyes for a second.
No automatic hoods, no TIG welding, no plasma cutter.
Right.
There was none of that.
Yeah.
None of that.
It was back like man's camp.
It was.
Yeah.
So basically, if you had to cut a piece of metal, you cut it with a torch. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have metoppable blades.
Right.
We had grinding wheels, not metoppable blades.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm getting a straight cut doing that's not the easiest.
So there's like
thing in the
15
world.
Welders, and the youngest one is 58 years old, and I'm 26.
And what'd they think of you? Like, what are you?
Oh, they half of them hated me.
Okay, yeah.
But I didn't give a crap.
Well, you can't worry about that.
Nah, I don't give a crap. But a lot of people do worry about it, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of people worry about what other people think about them. I don't, you know? I proceed on to who I am, and you get raw, real me, and that's it, you know?
Yeah.
So, there's no fake in my life.
Well, right. Well, you're there to contribute and
right.
You know, do what you
half
can.
Half the guys didn't like me because I was infringing on their territory.
Yeah.
They've been there 30, 40 years. Got a new whippersnapper. Somebody
that's young buck
coming in, wanting to take my job,
yeah.
You know. But I brought life to them as well, you know. One day I came in with an automatic welding hood, and they were like monkeys, like want bananas. What you got? You know, what you got?
Thing?
You know? And I showed them, it's an automatic welding hood. They're like, what is that? I said, as soon as you strike an arc, the lens goes dark. They could not believe it. Well, all the ones that didn't like me all of a sudden like me now.
Yeah.
And within a week, they all had automatic hoods and they were carrying them around on a little hook on their belt, like a sheriff with a pistol.
Yeah.
All proud.
So that's a van. You're helping out there.
So I stayed there 9 years. I got tired of the hazardous conditions. I got tired of working by myself. There ain't a lazy bone in my body. And if you want to get somewhere in life, you must have those type of bones or get them somewhere. But
that's a fact.
You gotta
have a good motor.
I started my welding, JK Welding in the garage, about a year before I decided I wanted to quit. Because I couldn't just quit. I wanted that reassurance to having something in place.
Smooth transition.
But I also have a very bad habit of hunting and fishing.
Okay, well.
Well, good habits.
Or you got a bad habit of working.
I got a bad habit of working too. But I had to be able to have enough income to come in to subside that habit I had and pay the bills at home.
Yeah.
You know, I needed hunting and fishing money. So I started doing stuff on the side.
What kind of fishing do you like doing?
Bass fishing, and I like to fish in the bay in Texas.
Okay.
In Matagorda Bay, down by south of Galveston.
So you're not on the dock?
No.
No, you're out on the boat.
No, I'm on the boat. I got a boat. We go out in the boat all the time, you know. So I like the saltwater fish, speckled trout, redfish, flounder. I like the bass fish. That's what I like to do. So I ended up having to, you know, revert back to myself of having additional income to support that habit and pay my bills at home. So that's what I started doing. I just started doing projects for various people out of my garage. And I did one or two and jobs. I did another job. Next thing you know, there's people bringing me all kind of stuff to do for them. And some of the stuff is, hey, this is an idea I have, but I'm not sure how to get from here to there. And I'm I'm like, I got you.
Gotcha. Do you remember the first project?
No. It's been too many.
What's the first one you remember that you're like, you know, this is really happening for me?
And in the first, I guess the first couple few projects I might have done that were significant enough to remember.
Yeah.
Were like, I manufactured and built like over 75 deer feeders.
Okay.
You know, I got the drums. I painted them all. And that's when I realized, man, I can paint pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I can paint some camouflage like nobody.
You know, that's
business.
Not as easy as people think,
yeah.
By the way.
So I'd go get 55-gallon drums. I would fabricate the brackets that go on the side. I would cut the legs that go on the side, and I would sell it as a kit. I'd put the flinger, the corn flinger on the bottom, and I would sell these things, $150, $200. You know, next thing I know, I'm 75 or 100 into it. So I remember building deer feeders a lot, deer stands, building some barbecue pits. And it's funny because as my company has grown and more people have come in to work for me and we've grown over the years, those are the things that I no longer do anymore.
Right.
Those were just things that I did that I like to do, but got me started.
Okay. And so as time has gone on, you've been kind of more like, those are my fun things to do. And we're getting more into the business side of like, okay, I've got something here. I can really make a business.
Yeah.
And did you have when you kind of made that pivot, Did you have a clear sense of where you wanted to go at that point?
Just up.
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 Sometimes that's all you need. Just
up.
Keep
Don't
going.
Ever look down. Get up, you know?
Yeah.
I never look back. Take no prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
I did anything and everything I could to shake a hand, to get a client, to get into any kind of networking or get my name in front of somebody. You know, back in the day, I quit my job. My full-time job, May 1st, 2005, I walk into my boss's office and I shut the door and he says, uh-oh. I said, yep, boss, time to go. I gotta go. And from that moment forward, I never looked back and had a regret.
Did he have a sense that you were going to be moving on?
He know, because everybody knew I was doing work on the side.
Okay.
Because I went from being an overtime hog at work to, hey, King, you want to work overtime? No, not today. I got a side job. I got a side job because I'm making more money on the side.
Yeah.
And I got to the point when I did have a full-time job, but I was working so much on the side, I ended up missing work.
Right.
Yeah, I was missing work so much to the point to where I was getting written up.
That was probably okay with you a little bit at that time. I mean, you didn't
Absolutely.
Like it.
Absolutely.
But...
I will tell you this. They rewrote the attendance program after I left, okay? I'll just tell you that.
New rules.
Yeah, so when I did quit, I went across the street to sign my paperwork to Miss Eleanor. She turned the paper and she slid it to me. She gave me a pen. She goes, sign right here. I said, okay. And she grabbed my hand. She goes, Mr. King? I said, yes, ma'am. And she says, it's a good thing that you're quitting today. And I was like, why is that? She says, well, we were going to let you go at 2:30 today.
Oh,
and
wow.
I said, Miss Eleanor, when it gets too hot in the kitchen, I know when to get out.
So the time it worked, it kind of worked.
It worked out.
Okay, so did you have that moment? Okay, I've quit my steady here, or I've resigned from my steady, and now you've got your thing. Did you ever have any moments of like, oh gosh, what have I just done?
No, not at all. The moment I signed that paper, I was in such a hurry to run to the truck to get back to the shop because I had so much work to do.
Right.
For the next week to 2 weeks, and I got hands. I'd already hired hands.
Oh, you had a business going.
I had a business going on the side already before I quit.
Yeah.
And that's most people's accomplishment of what they look for and strive for, is to get a company up and running before they quit their regular job. There's no other better opportunity than that.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people quit their job and hope to start a company, or they'll just barely start a company. I had 4 or 5 hands already working for me. At a fab shop I had rented already. Within a year's time.
Well, I, before I started Bryzos, was in distribution. And I did what you didn't do, which is I had many things planned, but I had to quit this job. Tech company's a far cry from a distribution company.
Yeah.
And so that next Monday, I'm like, it's on. I've got to get
I didn't have time to think about, oh, God, look what I've done. I didn't have time for that. I had time for, oh, God, I better hurry up. and get done with these projects so I can get paid. You know?
So when I asked you the outset, I said, you guys do a lot of different things. You wanted to be the turnkey, one-stop, but maybe in the last 5 years or 3 years, whatever you can remember, what are some of the projects that you were like really proud of those?
Man, there's
probably all of them, but.
No, it's not all of them. There's some projects I'm not proud of.
Okay.
Yeah, and that comes along when you're being in business for 20 years, having hundreds and thousands of hands work for you. Down in Texas, they have a place called Kima. It's Kima Boardwalk. That was a big milestone that started off early in my career of my business. I'd only been in business 3 years when Hurricane Ike hit the Gulf Coast of Texas and destroyed the whole coastline.
Yeah.
I was highly involved with that. I had to hire a lot of hands. I went from 10 hands to 40 hands overnight.
That's a big
and
difference.
So I rebuilt the entire Kima Boardwalk down in Texas, if you guys know where that's at. Besides that, I've done some other crazy jobs. I helped rebuild the Battleship of Texas in 2014.
Tell me about that project.
Very dungy.
Yeah.
Very dark. Okay. A lot of spider webs.
A lot of spider webs.
The most supervised job we've ever had. You know, we go down in the ship to work on it. You have people there watching you, so you don't touch anything else of the historical artifacts.
Okay.
Like, there's times I went down there and I'd see a soda pop can that was from, like, the 1940s, 1930s, and it's all still sitting in its original spots along with other items. And you can't touch that stuff.
Okay, so, it's a museum.
Yeah, it's a museum, basically. You know, so we had the bottom of that ship was rusting out. We were putting in stiffer plates and welded in plates to help prevent the flooding of the ship, keep it afloat.
So you're like kind of sistering up the structures to like, okay.
Right. And that was this 100th year anniversary. Here it is now. It's 111th year anniversary, actually at 110th year anniversary. It was rebuilt completely. So it's totally restored and repainted now.
Okay.
And it's open to the public now. It's a really great piece of history.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah, great.
That's a good one to be part of.
It's a fascinating piece of history to be a part of. Actually, to go on there and to see, that, you know, that whole ship was put together with hot rivets.
Right.
You know, welding wasn't even
a
thought.
Yeah.
You know? So we did that. Rebuilt all the air stations for the Naval Air Station down in Corpus Christi, Texas.
Uh-huh.
We have 5 airplane hangars. We built all them. That's a milestone.
How many square feet are those things?
Oh, they're giant.
Wait, a million?
I'm talking 800,000 square feet.
Yeah.
They're big.
Those are massive.
Yeah, they are. Rebuilt all those airplane hangars. That were down there for 2 years.
2 years. I was going to ask how long
is
that shit gonna take?
Since then, did a couple world records. Built the world's largest wind chime.
All right. Where did you build that?
This wind chime, and I'll provide you pictures so you can show your audience.
Yeah, I'd love to see that.
It weighs 70,000 pounds. It took 3,000 feet of pipe to make it.
I'm thinking wind chime, like the kind on the porch with the long things hanging down.
No,
what
sir.
Are we talking?
No, you guys check this out. I'm going to show you a picture of it. Check this out here.
We'll get them on the...
This thing has got many names. A lot of people call it Roadrunner. They call it Tornado. But it makes music when the wind blows. The top 3 layers of pipe have special fluted machine holes in them. When the wind goes over, it sounds like a big pan flute, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. And to me, it sounds like a horror movie.
Okay.
So this is the only one in the United States. I built it for a very well-known oil man in Texas.
Yes.
He had it for 5 years. He sold his property. The new buyer said, you got to move the artwork. So he donated the artwork to the city of Abilene, Texas.
Wow.
And a couple $100,000. I said, I'll give all this to you under one condition.
Yeah.
And they said, what's that? He said, you have to call John King to move it. If you don't call John, I'm not donating.
Really?
So Abilene called me out of the blue, said, hey, we got a project for you. We need you to move a wind chime. And I'm like, move a wind chime?
So did you know any of the backstory yet?
No.
So it's the first you heard of it?
No, they called me and said, we need you to move a wind chime. I'm like, there ain't but one wind chime in the world. but I don't have to move. And it's like, yeah, it's being donated to us. I'm like, what the hell?
So you didn't know what was going on yet.
So they showed me the location, the new location. Need to move, disassemble it here in Austin. Need to transport it. And you need to reassemble it in Abilene, Texas. I said, all right, well, here's your price. And we moved it.
Is that there today?
It's in Abilene, Texas.
Yep. That's remarkable.
It is awesome. Besides that, we've done also another world record, the world's largest nut.
Really?
The world's largest threaded nut. It's a hex nut.
How big are we talking?
It weighs 10,000 pounds.
Okay.
It's 19 foot wide. It's 16 foot tall, and it has an ID thread of 10 feet. And
really?
We'll give you some pictures so you can show the audience that as well.
So is that something that you, was that a commissioned thing, or that's
it's
just
always,
like,
okay. It's always a commissioned thing. I never build stuff for fun.
Okay.
First of all, I never have time.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's.
Second of all, if you're building stuff for non-commission, you just want attention.
Right.
I already get enough attention. I don't need any more, you know?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, and also the people that are working for you or helping you, might be wondering if John lost his mind if all of a sudden it's a non-commissioned piece.
Right.
And you're like, we're going to build the biggest hex bolt you've ever seen.
Exactly.
They'll be like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
So you're an ambitious person. You are where you are today. Where is JK Welding going? Like, what do you got in your head? Like, what's next?
Over the last 11 years, I have tried to purchase the 10 acres that's landlocked behind JK Welding.
Okay.
It's landlocked by me and the church next to us.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other side of that property behind me is a pipeline in a neighborhood. So it's been landlocked for 12 years. And
really?
I've attempted 7 times to buy it. Obviously, the landowner finally got up over the age where he figured it's time to sell. Quit fighting the fight. Let's sell it to JK Welding. So we bought it. And within 35 days, we cleared the entire property. We fenced it with over 1,000 feet of fence. I brought in 800 tons of crushed concrete. We put up a brand new paint shop.
Nice.
We poured 30 trucks of concrete. I did all this and commissioned all this, and I ran and supervised all this personally myself.
Yeah.
To save money.
Yeah.
You want something done? Do it yourself. Save money.
What was your biggest learning in doing that? I mean, like, some of that stuff you had maybe done before, I'm assuming. I mean, that's a big project.
It's a big project.
So what was kind of the part you're like, we'll make it happen, but I'm not totally sure yet on how it's going to go.
There was no part of me that was not totally sure.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's all committed 100% in. Let's go. Gas, pedal to the metal. Let's get it. Yeah.
In or out.
In or out.
Yeah.
We cleared the property. We discovered a 40-foot by 80-foot concrete slab on the property that was already existing, covered with brush and trees, in perfect condition.
Was the seller aware that that was there?
I don't know. I didn't talk to the seller. Did not have a good communication.
It was yours now.
It's mine now, and the good Lord has blessed my ass.
That was a good find.
You know what?
And it was stabilized. Like, you put
man,
a real weight on it.
Perfect. Looked like a brand new slab.
Okay.
The moment we discovered that and cleaned it off, I'm like,
we can do something with that.
We're going to put a brand new paint shop here. We've been needing a bigger paint shop, so we put a 40 by 80 paint shop on there. I ordered the building. 2 weeks later, it got put up. It got put up last Monday. They're
nice.
Now, as of yesterday, they're finished. They're done.
And you're going to start moving gear in there?
Yep. Today, they're officially finished hanging lights inside there.
Okay.
All the LED lighting, the exhaust fans, you know, for all the painting systems. We're putting all that in, finishing up today.
And what type of paint systems are you going to be capable of?
Just basic epoxy. Nothing special.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And most of our customers, that's all they ever require.
Okay.
Know? We're not professional painters by any means. You know, if you're needing, some special mill thicknesses and we need to do multiple inspections, you need to be certified to this paint spec or that paint spec, we're not those guys.
Okay.
We offer just general painting for our customers, and they love it. And they love their paint job.
And you're talking both protection and, you know, aesthetic.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So today, it's noon. It's on Tuesday. I have a meeting in the morning at 7 a.m. in Houston with the electrician to start wiring this building up. Next phase, we're going to put up another fab shop next February or March, because I have two locations.
Okay.
The second location of where a lot of my guys are, there's 10 or 12 of them over there. They're actually going to be brought back to the corporate office, and we need to have a home for them, okay. Which is a new fab shop.
Yep.
Yeah. So we're going to let our lease expire at the second location and bring those guys on.
Okay. That'll be nice to have everybody.
It will kind be. Of we got plenty of land now. We're going to put up another building. That will probably give us about a total of 50,000 square foot under roof.
It's quite a bit.
It's quite a bit.
And so you'll have how many people on site at that point?
That would be probably a total of about, that varies between 60 and 70.
Yeah.
Yeah, when things ramp up, I've had as many as 100. I like 50 to 70. Yeah, it's comfortable there.
It's comfortable. And I actually want to take us back to like the beginning, to like an earlier part of the conversation. So you were laying brick for a bit. What did you think of that? Did it give you like...
I freaking hated it, man.
Yeah, I mean, so I was just, you know, we're in Chicago and I'm walking through the streets and I'm just looking at, there's so many bricks stacked up in this town.
Yeah.
It's like a never ending thing.
Yeah. But, I mean, looking back now, I realize I hated it more than I really did. Back then, man, I was a trooper. You know, I did what I had to do and I enjoyed the moment I was doing it.
Yeah.
But looking back now, it wasn't for me, you know, but that's what I did. I learned a different trade. I was open to it. Never said no, you know, never said no. I'm open to whatever.
Yeah, you usually don't regret learning how to do stuff.
You have to be very ambitious. You know, if you want a job and you want to be good at it and you want to strive to be a leader, you have to be ambitious. You just have to be. It's got to be embedded in you.
I heard a saying, I forget where it was. It was within the last few days that somebody said, I don't think they meant last name, but they said, there's a king in every crowd, which I thought was sort of an interesting concept.
That's a good phrase.
In a big mess of people, like with all these people here.
That's a good phrase.
There's a king in every crowd.
I like that. I do like that.
And, you know, just think on that, because I think it's sort of an interesting concept that.
You're not all kings, yeah. By no means. You know, it takes a rare person to be an entrepreneur, to be a leader. Mm. There's different multiple levels of different people throughout the world. You know, from being a leader to being an owner, an entrepreneur, being a supervisor, general foreman, superintendent. The list goes on and on and on. You know, different people have different characteristics about themselves to be able to be comfortable to do really good at different jobs.
All right, let's talk about that for a second, which is entrepreneurship. What in your mind, I know it takes shapes and forms, but in your mind, what's sort of like the top 3 to 5 characteristics that in your mind are basically requirements to be an entrepreneur?
Man, you got to be able to strategize, mm-hmm. pre-plan, got to be very strategic, got to be smart, got to have good people. But, you know, you just got to have a wit about you that understands what you're doing now. And what the next 5 steps are. Not what the next 2 steps are, what the next 5 is. So I'm a stickler for pre-planning and pre-organizing so much where I can see pieces falling in place to be successful.
Yes.
Not just an hour from now, but a day or a week from now. You know?
Yeah.
I'm fortunate enough to be aware of situations that are unfortunate situations, but able to see them prior to them happening.
Yes.
And make those changes to not allow those things to happen.
There's an author that said there's, you know, when you're an entrepreneur in a business, there's always a paddle coming down the track trying to hit you in the ass, you know, and how do you make sure that you don't get throttled by that paddle that's coming down the track?
You got to be able to see it to believe it.
And I think that there are people that are able to kind of really see around the corner.
Absolutely. There's just not that many of them, you know. I've been fortunate enough to be able to label myself as one of those people to be able to see the unfortunate things coming or, hey, this is going to happen and this is going to happen if you don't see this. And a lot of my hands look at me and go, damn, he's right. And I don't say it to be right. I say it so you're more successful working for me,
yes.
You know. And a lot of things that other people say is that's what makes him boss. He can see the things that you don't think about.
And I would.
And I like being that person.
Well, there, it's nice to be that because it's an informed position to be in. And if you can help your team be successful, that's a great thing. And I think that things that I may add to your list, I'd be interested to your reaction. I think that you need to have grit. I mean, there are times that are harder than others.
Oh, man.
You know, and you just have to have a conviction in your vision.
You got to have a lot of grit.
And just know that, hey, you know, right now it's not, you know, it's in my favorite, you know, my favorite phase, but I know it's on the other side of this phase.
Yeah, you got to have a lot of grit. You got to be tough, man. You can't be an owner and allow employees to run over you, or you can't be soft with certain guys, certain employees. You just can't, you know?
Yeah.
I've been called a name or two in my life.
Well, they say you can't please everybody.
No. No, that goes at home and at work, you know?
Yeah, you can't please everybody.
Yeah, you can't. It is what it is. Roll with the punches, baby. That's all I tell you. Roll with the punches.
Yeah. Sometimes you get handed some.
Suck it up, Buttercup. You don't like it? That's too bad.
Yeah, I got a lot of Buttercups working around the shop.
Oh, man. Yeah. I ain't got none at my shop. We don't have Buttercups working at JK Weld. No, sir. Not at all. Not at all.
So what are you doing? So when you're not running JK Welding or thinking about it, which maybe is at all times, but you do break away to go fish and hunt.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And then, so how often are you actually getting out to do that?
You know, I have a place down in South Texas, and we get away to go down there, you know, every other weekend usually, you know.
Oh, good.
And then hunting season, of course, that's upon us right now.
Yep.
Here we are in September. It's the kickoff of bird season. I go to Mexico on Friday, and I couldn't be happier.
So,
a lot of birds and a lot of tequila.
Yeah.
No, we are. I am from Texas. We love tequila.
Yeah. Well, you're right near it all, aren't you?
Yeah.
Right near it all.
But in November, you know, hunting season starts. I like taking my little boy out. I used to be a guy who went and hunted Kansas for a week or 2 weeks and go to Missouri and go to Wisconsin. And I still enjoy that kind of stuff. But my boy's he's at the age of 11 now.
Yeah.
So I have canceled and moved some of that off the back burner, onto the back burner, and spending more time with him. So you guys, listen up. Take a kid in the outdoors. It's the best thing you could ever do. I'm telling you, hunting, fishing, hiking, whatever it is, take a kid to the outdoors. It's an awesome memory.
I'll second that. It's a really good use of time.
Yeah.
You know, throw those iPads in a bag and
oh man,
and go do some nature stuff. So, where can people find you when they got a project? What's the best way to?
Oh man, any social media. Go to our website, jkwelding.net. We're all over Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, you name it. Catch me and my company on LinkedIn for all you fab techers. A lot of you seem to like LinkedIn a lot. You know, I get stopped quite often to get. I get recognized from LinkedIn quite a bit.
Yeah.
Got a pretty big following there, and we always like posting pictures and very interesting stories. I'm a story writer. That's what I like to do, and you guys can catch more of those stories on any of those social media channels.
All right. Well, also check out Brizos, brizos.com. Check out Irregardless Broad podcast where you learn more about John. And, John, thanks for coming in today, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Fun to get to know you.
Yeah. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you.